Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cup podcast, a proud member of the Pitcher List podcast network. You can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts. You can leave us ratings and reviews. We greatly appreciate it. You can also find us on Twitter at Keep or Cut. That's cut with a K. You can find me, I'm Chad Young, at Chad Young. Pretty easy. And you can find my co-host, Pete Ball, at Pete B Baseball. And Pete, we are on to episode 102. And I know you said you were going to just boycott the jersey number thing. But I do think we got to pay the captain his due, at least a little bit, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. We have to give Jimmy Fox his due, and I mean, he's well before my time, but definitely a player who left a undoubtable mark on baseball.
Yeah, that's I like the dodge. That was very, very well done. yeah, I think there actually have been a handful of good number twos. So obviously, you know, the reference I was making to Derek Jeter is the most sort of immediately relevant one to the world today, just because he's the most recent and you know, arguably one of the best ever to wear the number. However, you are right, Jimmy Fox did wear the number one or the number two for one season in his career. So I don't know how much credit he gets for that jersey, but he did wear it once. But even so, that Fox is the best player by Baseball Reference WAR to have worn the number two, even though he only did it for 1 year. Jeter is not second best, though. The second best is Charlie Gehringer with the Tigers in the 30s and 40s, 84.8 career R WAR, Jeter only at 71.3. Those are three pretty good players, and Gehringer actually wore the number for 11 seasons, so he legitimately has a claimed that number. And yeah, but then after that, another Fox, Nelly Fox, wore the jersey for 13 years. And then there's a bunch of guys who wore it like part time. Darrell Evans wore it for a season. Roberto Alomar wore it for a season. Greg Nettles wore it for a season. I'm trying to think if there's other players on this list. I guess the other player on this list that stands out to me that I would associate with the number two is Troy Tulowitzki, who wore it for 11 seasons, mostly with the Rockies and then with the Jays after he was with the Jays. And then your boy Xander, right? Wore it for I think basically his whole career at this point. He's still wearing it with the Padres this year. So there's some good active twos, right? Bogarts is the best. Justin Turner took that number.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, huh?
It is a little weird.
I'm sure there was some kind of conversation there, but yeah, Bogey wore it for 9 years here.
And interesting, like Turner didn't wear it with the Dodgers. I can't remember what he was with the Dodgers, but he wore it with the Mets a decade ago. And so he's going back to an old number, I guess. But that's, you know, I guess it makes sense. Like Xander is not, you know, he's not the like surefire Hall of Fame, retire his number, club legend status that would make you say like, okay, why is somebody putting this number on so quickly? That does happen sometimes where someone leaves and you're like, yeah, I know that there's someone else here. I know we're not retiring this number tomorrow, but like nobody can wear it. Xander doesn't quite rise to that level, I guess, but it still feels weird that it's like so quick.
It is. It doesn't remind me of the situation, but there's a similar situation going on with the Denver Nuggets, who are probably going to win the title. And Nikola Jokic has the same number as Carmelo Anthony. They did not retire that number. That's two of the best Nuggets, obviously, of all time. So, yeah, they're both number 15. I think the obvious solution is you just retire them both. There are people who are like, you can only retire Jokic and Carmelo loses out. I think that's dumb. Come on,
we've got that issue in Seattle with the Mariners, where Randy Johnson wore number 51, mm-hmm. and so did Ichiro.
Oh, see, okay.
So you're talking two, you know, legit Hall of legends Famers. Among the best in the game. But yeah, and I think eventually that'll be the solution, is probably a retired two. As it stands right now, Ichiro is the guy who, like, he shows up for all the, like, historic events for the Mariners. Like, he is a part of the club. And Randy Johnson, I mean, this was before I was in Seattle, and so I don't know, like, how much bad blood there was when he left and stuff like that. But he's not quite as, you know, inner circle with the club anymore. And so it makes me think, you know, they'd be happy to retire Ichiro's number and leave Randy out to dry. But yeah, it happens. It does happen. I don't think you'll end up in that situation with the number two for the Red Sox. I don't think Justin Turner is going to establish himself at that level with the team. And like I said, Xander, I think, you know, just does fall short of that for me. So anyways, that's enough time on number two. We avoided talking about Derek Jeter too much, so hopefully that worked for you. Today's episode, we are going to get into some listener questions. We've had a few questions come in on the Twitter machine, and we're gonna hammer through some of those, and then we'll see if we've got time to get to some other stuff as well. First question we're going to talk about, this comes in from Jeff on Twitter. Jeff is the first name bunch of numbers meme come to life, at Jeff652-78909 if you want to find him. But legitimate question and a good question. Says, I've been hit by pitcher injuries, Erod, Steele, Sale, Freed. I know that feeling, Jeff. I know that feeling. Wants to know, should I ride it out or look to trade for pitching? And I pulled up his team page. And so a little context here. He is in a head-to-head Fangraphs points league. It is a league, those head-to-head leagues, as you know, have different numbers. Some have no starting pitching limit, in which case you only have two starting pitching slots. And then I think they have like 8, 9, 10, or 11 start limits, something like that. His league has 10. So like our staff league we play in is 9. So this is one more start than we're used to dealing with. So he does have 10 starts he's got to fill every week. And his pitching, as he mentioned, has a bunch of injuries. So his pitchers on the IL right now are Sale, Fried, Steele, McCullers, Eduardo Rodriguez, and then AJ Puck in his bullpen, which, different story. His healthy pitchers right now are pretty good still. So he's got Strider, he's got Kershaw, Pablo Lopez, Andrew Haney, who's been sort of up and down this year, Hayden Wesneski, who is going to be the beneficiary of Steele going on the IL, it seems. Bailey Ober, who's been good. Joe Musgrove, who I think is starting to turn things around. Louis Varland, who's been better lately. And that's it. That's basically it. So he's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 healthy starting pitchers. So, Pete, you're him. Are you... I mean, he's already updated his trade block. He didn't even wait for our answer. He's got a trade block update right now that he's looking for starting pitching. If you're him, oh, and the one other piece of context we should note here is in this head-to-head league, he is 9-0. He has a 4-game lead in his division. No one else in his division is above 5-4. He has scored more than 1,100 more points than any other team in the league. The best team in the other division is 6-3. Like, he is, as of right now, running away with this league. So with that context, you going out to find a starting pitcher if you're him?
Yeah, I don't think he needs to necessarily make a trade for a starting pitcher. I mean, you gave me his rotation. I feel like he has 3 or 4 names that you can pretty much rely on consistently. In any given week, you could have 2, maybe even 3 if you get really lucky, if those guys have 2 start weeks. And so in a 10 start week, like, you still have a lot filled that can keep you contending and keep you afloat until you get those pitchers back. We don't know what's going on with Sale, but Fried, all signs are looking up. It looks like it's around the All-Star break. Erod, I think that finger's going to keep him out more than the 15 days, but we could see him soon. And I know McCullers was throwing again. I can't recall, but like, to this point, you have
you're not counting on McCullers,
pitching.
Right? I mean, let's just pause for a moment on McCullers. are you counting on him at all? If you've got him,
I think counting on is not the right word choice. I think if you were to say that, like, my rotation for a period of time could be supplemented by a pitcher who, when he's on the mound, is usually pretty good, right? I mean, he's not an ace, but he's usually pretty solid. He could be inconsistent. I'll give you that. But
sure.
Lance McCullers, I it when Lance McCullers is healthy, I think he's mostly a must roster player in anything deeper than 12 teams, or in Ottnu for that matter, where the roster sizes are huge. So that's my long way of saying, like, no matter what happens to Chris Sale, you have Strider, Kershaw, Musgrove, you got Fried coming back. You don't need to take away from your strengths to bolster that.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think the other thing to note is just pulling up free agent starting pitchers in this league, some names that are out there. And these guys are, you know, they're not necessarily studs, but if you're looking for guys who maybe have an easy matchup to get you through a couple of weeks, something like that, Garrett Whitlock is a free agent. Jared Schuster, who's putting up over 4 points an inning. Braxton Garrett, whose overall line is only 3.97 points per inning pitch, but has been just nails lately. I mean, he had a absolute horrendous, just truly horrendous start against Atlanta, where he gave up 4 home runs and 4 1/3 innings, ended up with negative 53 points. You probably shouldn't have started him if you had him against Atlanta. That was probably just a bad decision. Although I assume some people got thrown off because he pitched decently against Atlanta the week before that. But if you avoided that start, he's been excellent for you. Like, really, really good. So, you can go get Garrett. Who else is out there right now? Michael Grove is back in the rotation, right? I think. So he is at least a theoretical option. Aaron Civale, back from injury and pitching quite well. He's almost at 6 points per inning this year. It's only 17 2/3 innings. But, like, again, need a guy who can eat some innings for you. And Civale is even maybe more valuable in these head-to-head formats because he goes relatively deep into games. And so that has added value where you're not on an innings limit. Other names, Julio Teheran. Is out there. I don't know. He's made two really good starts. I don't know what you do with him.
Two names that stick out to me. Rich Hill's been pitching well lately. I think he doesn't really have a favorable matchup this week, I believe. I think he's got a tough opponent on the schedule this week. But he's been pitching well. And we've seen Rich Hill each of the last 2-3 seasons go on stretches, especially 2 years ago when he was with the Rays, go on stretches where he looks like awesome. And you got to get him out there. I think he had a 13 strikeout game with the Rays 2 years ago, which is meaningless, right? But it's to show that, like, Rich Hill doesn't need to be pumping gas to be effective, which we all know because he maxes out at 88 miles per hour and grunts while he's doing it. So don't let the age throw you off. If he's out there and he's pitching, he's been pretty well lately. And the other one that sticks out to me, maybe it's the homer in me, I don't know, but Cutter Crawford was stretched out as a starter at the beginning of the year. Then he went to the bullpen, and now he's trying to get stretched out as a starter again. He's probably going to start Wednesday against Cleveland, so close your ears, Chad, but I think that's a pretty favorable matchup. So yeah. I don't know if you're going to get much length out of him, but if you're just trying to bridge the gap to getting those guys back, I don't know how long Crawford's going to be in the rotation for, but you might be able to get some decent strikeout numbers there at a minimum.
Yeah, and I think the general point here is
you got options.
Given the situation he's in, like, you don't have to do anything crazy. There's nothing wrong with making a trade for a starting pitcher if a good trade comes along. But, like, I don't see a need to do anything. I don't know. The worst case scenario here is the next week or two, you struggle a little bit and you maybe lose one of those two matchups. Like, given how much better he's been than everyone else in this league, he's probably not going to lose both of those matchups. But if he loses one of them and falls to, 2 weeks from now, he's 10-1 instead of 11-0, it won't matter. he's still in a really good spot. So I also think because it's a head to head, you're focused primarily on, like, get into the playoffs and see what can happen. And you're in a good spot to do that. So if I am making a trade for a pitcher right now, it's making a trade with a, what's my rotation look like at the end of August into September? Not what does my rotation look like today mindset, because that team is going to make the playoffs. So I think if this team were in a different spot, right? Pitching's been really hard to come by this year. So there are a lot of teams and a lot of leagues that are in a similar position of needing pitching. If you're middle of the pack in a playoff league and you're short on pitching and had a couple of injuries pop up, I'm then maybe going to try to make an aggressive move and get something done, because it's been hard to have pitching in place. I don't think you'll find yourself in a few weeks being like, oh, all these guys are back and now I have too much pitching. Like, that won't be an issue. If it really is, you'll be able to make another trade and trade away a pitcher, no problem. And you do have to keep yourself in that playoff picture, right? What you don't want to do is if you're a team that's like 5-4 in one of these divisions or 4-5 in one of these divisions and sort of on the edge, like the other division in this league, the first place team is 6-3. The second place team is 5-4. The next four teams are all 4-5. If you're one of those 5-4, 4-5 teams, even the 6-3 team, and you're finding yourself in a similar position, like you may need to go make a move because a couple of bad weeks could be devastating to your playoff chances.
I guess my last piece of advice for this team would be if you're looking, if you really want to make a move for a starting pitcher, I think Justin Steele would be the piece that I would actually try to move. I think there were signs that he was obviously performing above his head because nobody's that good, but he was going to come back down to earth. He kind of did. Then he got hurt, but he's still just $7. He's a young starting pitcher. If I was a rebuilding team, that's maybe the kind of dart throw I'm looking for. And if I have an overpriced pitcher, you know, I'm looking at that team that's 0-9. And if you could pull, you know, he got blown up his last start, but Shane Bieber for Justin Steele and blank. I think that's maybe the type of deal I would try to make. I would move one of my injured pitchers. I wouldn't try to do something too crazy with my offense because all of a sudden you trade one of those offensive pieces and then you get an injury there. Now you're looking for hitting because you traded it away. So I'd just be careful trading away from strengths in deep leagues because it's never as bolstered as we think.
Yeah. Boy, that 0-9 team, not only do they have Bieber, who's currently under 4 points per inning, their other two most expensive starting pitchers are Sandy Alcantara, who is by no means been bad, but certainly hasn't been what anybody hoped he would be.
Oh, God,
and,
no.
And Alek Manoah, who's been bad, as we discussed on last week's episode, or 2 weeks ago, whenever we discussed Manoah. It was last week, I think. Like, he's just got a bunch of guys that have just disappointed that he's put a lot of money in. That is a team that is... his most expensive hitter is Trey Turner. Goodness. I'd be talking to that team because that team needs a rebuild badly. So let's jump to our next question. This one comes from Brian Arbour. He's on Twitter at BK Arbour, A-R-B-O-U-R. Brian asks, what tools and processes do y'all use? He said y'all, just so we're clear. Do y'all use to identify prospects worth bidding on? Signed, this guy who's coming to the reality that I'm playing for next year. That's I feel you, Brian. I've got some leagues where I'm coming to that realization as well. We talked last week, Pete, about your trade in the listener Auto New League. And then I followed up by making a trade and I'm still discussing some other ones, but I traded, let's see if I can pull up my trade there. Cause I'm in the same boat, right? I made a decision. It's time to look to the future. I traded Anthony Rizzo at $12, Brandon Nimmo at $16, and a $3 Bryson Stott for $6 Andrés Giménez, $3 Logan Ohapi, $9 Spencer Steer, and $2 Colton Cowser. And I think the thing that, you know, the first thing I would say to anyone who's rebuilding, and we will talk prospects in a moment because that's what the question was, but the first thing I would say to Brian or anyone else looking to rebuild is if you look at the trades that Pete and I made, we picked up between us in that league six players: Wander Franco, Alek Manoah, Andrés Giménez, Logan Ohapi, Spencer Steer, and Colton Cowser. One of those guys is not in the majors right now. I guess two because Ohapi's hurt, but that doesn't count. He's in the majors. The only guy on that list who's not in the majors is Colton Cowser, who is making a mockery of AAA right now and really should be called up. A month ago is actually, that's when he should have been called up, was a month ago. But as soon as there's an opportunity, he's going to be up in Baltimore because they could use him. And he is just, he's putting up a great, great season. So that's my first piece of advice is like, don't get overly reliant on how you evaluate prospects. Find guys that are already delivering or that you feel like are going to deliver that are already ready.
Yeah, I think team context is important for me. This is building on Chad's point. So if you have prospects who are already almost ready, well, now things like team context come into play. Prospects have just been so hard to hit on. They always have been, but especially I keep going back to this. We haven't talked about it in a long time, but ever since the COVID season, that lost minor league season, and I guess one stat that I will look at is plate discipline, right? Walk rate, strikeout rate, and just anticipating that when they get to the major leagues, it's going to get worse, right? Gunnar Henderson, right? He looked like he was making improvements in his strikeout rate. He's posting like a over 30% strikeout rate this year. Anthony Volpe's strikeout rate is terrible. Matt McClain was a guy who looked like he was figuring out his strikeout issues. He had a sub 20% strikeout rate in the minor leagues this year. He's striking out 26% of the time. So if there's swing and miss in a player's game, then major league pitching is going to find it and it's going to expose them until they get used to it. And so there's going to be that rough adjustment period that we see these guys go through. So it's for me, like to make a heavy investment in a prospect, like after in a big trade or at auction or whatever it might be, it's going to have to be somebody who's close to the major leagues. It's going to have to be somebody who I'm confident they're not going to be crushed by their strikeouts. And even then, I'm not going all in on that player. If I can get a steady veteran, I'm going to choose that, especially in Ottenu, where, you know, the value in a player that's a top prospect or something like that can climb pretty quickly. You're going to miss those maximized years.
And I think when I am looking at prospects, you know, there are those sort of elite Ellie De La Cruz types, and you know, go get them if you can. But one of the things I do a lot of thinking about when I'm buying prospects is who are the guys whose value is going to go up rather than the guys whose value is currently high. And as an example of that, I'm trying to remember who it was. I saw like two different analysts who I trust talking up Drew Gilbert of the Astros last week, 2 weeks ago. I don't know, something like that. And his roster percentage in Ottenu is low, single digits, maybe low single digits. It's gone up a little bit, but like he becomes a guy I'm very interested in, right? Because you can get him basically for free. He's not like you could pick him up off the wire, right? Pick him up and just cut some like random eighth outfielder you no longer need because you're not competing. There are guys like that you can go find. And so it seems a little, you know, you're asking what tools we use. The answer I'm giving you here at some level is like, I go read
other analysts
work who are good at this, but, that's what I do. Chris Clegg, Eric Cross, Matt Heckman, I'm trying to think of who else. Chris Welsh. So like there's a bunch of guys like that it's just like I trust their analysis, and I want to see when, you know, especially when I see consensus among them, I see two or three of those guys all talking up the same guy. It's like, oh, this is interesting. This guy's going to move up lists and this is the time to buy in on him. But then as Pete said, if you're looking at a trade where you can't just grab a guy for free like that, that is where plate discipline is just huge for me, and contact quality, right? So I want to find for prospect reports on max EV, 90th percentile EV, if you can get it, hard hit rate or barrel rate, if you can get it. Finding that kind of data on a player and seeing a guy like, regardless of the results, if they're hitting the ball hard and they've got good plate discipline for a hitter, that's what I'm looking at. For pitchers, I'm looking for low walk rates and high strikeout rates, right? I mean, it's sort of the opposite of hitters, but like, that's really what I want to see. I also, especially for pitchers, want to find guys who are going to be up soon. Hitters, I've got a little bit more patience for a guy who's in like double A or about to be in double A, maybe if I'm in a rebuild, because they still have a good chance to be up next year. Pitchers, I just feel like, I don't know, you take a pitcher who's like a year away and then they have a shoulder issue, and then they get traded to a different org that doesn't need them as soon. Or then like, there's just so many things that happen to pitchers.
Still waiting for Forrest Whitley.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like at this time last year, I would have told people to be all over Daniel Espino, and we're still going to be waiting on him for a while still. So I'm more interested in someone like, to stick within the Guardians org, to stick with someone like Gavin Williams, who is performing in AAA and could be up tomorrow if they needed him. I don't think it's likely to happen that soon, but it can't be that far away if the opportunity arises. So that's sort of where I am. But again, to go back to what Pete said, like what we were saying earlier, like find those guys who are, you know, already in the majors, already producing. You're not going to be able to pry away like a stud young, although I guess you got Alec or you got a Wander Franco in your deal. So maybe you can sometimes, like, you're gonna have to overpay for a guy like that, I guess is what I should say. But, you know, you're gonna have a hard time getting like Josh Lowe, for example. He'll be a hard guy to pry away from the team that has him because they're relying on him and he's young and he's cheap and they can dream on him as much as you can and they're helping right now. But I would rather find a way to overpay for a guy like that than grab two or three guys who are middling prospects in double A who are, you know, hitting the ball hard but striking out a ton. Like that's so. Yeah. Anything else to add to that? Any other thoughts on prospects?
I guess my only thing would be now that we are fully in mid-season and there are plenty of teams out there that have an idea if they're going to compete or not, I guess that is when I am more likely to stash those more middling prospects just because, you know, that middling prospect is going to do more for me on my bench than Mark Canha is at this point in the season, right? So that goes back to your point earlier, that like ninth outfielder that you can just cut. Why not throw a dart? But keep in mind, you're on a timeline here. So if you're throwing a dart at like Miguel Blyce, who is like 18 years old, well, you're not going to know when that dart lands, man. So at least choose players in that double A, triple A range so that by the time you're ready to compete again, you have an idea of the investment that you've made in this player, if it's going to hit or not.
Yeah, I'm not bothering with guys who are that far away. I mean, like I will say, like my leagues recently, I've seen a couple of auctions start for Ethan Salas, the 16, now maybe it's now 17-year-old Padres catcher. And like I get the hype on Salas. Everything suggests he's going to be a star. He looks like a guy who's going to move quickly for his age and position. That could still be 3 years.
Right.
Right. If he's up 3 years from now. Right. No, that's what I'm saying. If he's up in 3 years, it would be insanely fast. And so there's no price at which I'm interested in Salas right now. Because the 90th percentile outcome for him isn't actually good for you as a fantasy manager today. So the other quick tool I will throw out there, and it's sort of it's a simple one. But if you go to the players tab, the search page in AutoNew, and you switch the level to MILB and you limit the search to either just pitchers or just hitters, you can basically pull up a list and then sort by roster percent of prospects. So you set it to MILB and like I'm actually looking at our listener league right now, and I've also filtered this in this case by free agents only, because this is, you know, in this league I could use some prospects, right? You too. So Pete, you can feel free to steal my names here, but like the top the most rostered free agent minor leaguers in this league are Zach Veen, who I'm not that excited about, Oscar Colas, who does sort of fit what I'm looking for, he's performing really well in AAA and could be up again anytime now, Mason Wynn, who's having a bit of a down year offensively, I would say. Jackson Merrill, he's a guy who seems like he might be too far away. Brooks Lee, who's kind of interesting. Daniel Espino, we talked about. Connor Norby, who could be up soon. So you can find names that way. And if you uncheck the free agents only box and you look at guys who are both rostered and free agents, you can also then sort by who's being added or dropped recently. And that gives you a sense of, like when I was saying, you know, who's somebody whose value might be going up. Guy who's being added a lot in the last week, his value is going up right now, right? So like, if I look at a 7-day add percentage for all minor leaguers, the most added minor leaguer over the last 7 days is Junior Caminero in Tampa Bay. He's now up to double A. He gets interesting now that he's up at double A. Ethan Salas is actually second on that list, who I mentioned I'd stay away from. But like Ronnie Mauricio is a good example of a guy who I might target right now. I don't think his trade value is like through the roof, untouchable, elite prospect level, but he's killing AAA. He could be up soon. So like he's the kind of guy that I'm sort of interested in. So that's just to throw some names out there of players who I'd look at, as well as to suggest how you can sort of find some players and get a sense of like whose value is up, whose value is down, who might be interesting targets. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get to more questions. All right, welcome back. Our next listener question comes from Nicholas Masuto on Twitter. He is at Solemn Visitor, but the O's are zeros. So at Solemn Visitor says, should I move a $52 Acuna in Fangraphs points? He's in league number 481. He's already started selling and will be rebuilding this year. And he says, and probably next. Seems like this could be Acuna's high point in trade value, or is a $56 to $60 Acuna something I want to build my competitive team around? That's a weird one, because he's already suggesting he's going to be rebuilding next year. And that's not a spot I find myself in very often. I don't want to be rebuilding for a year and a half like that. So, I don't know. I guess I would say this. If you're rebuilding and you're not thinking you're competing next year, I would trade Acuna now, because sitting on that $54 salary next year and $56 the year after, if you're not going to compete next year, like, his value is not going to go up. It may not go down, but like, you're not going to get meaningfully more from him a year from now than you do today. You're going to get less for him in the offseason than you do today. So like, if you're really thinking next season is also a rebuild season for you, then I think it's an easy choice and you trade him.
Yeah, there's no question I'm trading him. If you had him at like $40, maybe, but then he's going to get really hit hard in arbitration. I just think the potential return for a Ronald Acuna, who like could still be a keeper for another team, right? Like, he hasn't priced himself into like definite cut range. He's right now the top player in fantasy. So I think you could probably get an absolute haul for him, and that's better than just holding on, because you're not only getting that haul, you're presumably getting a lot more money to spend in the next auction, where you can just throw that at another elite talent to replace Acuna. So I'm in favor of definitely moving on from him here. If this is a stingy league and people are giving you pennies on the dollar, then I have no problem holding on to him. And yeah, I'd love to build around a $52 Acuna, because I agree with Chad. I think the timeline of 2 years is a little strong. If you look at this team, Chad, he's got Ellie De La Cruz, who could be up and impacting this team. He's got him for just $2, which even though he hasn't reached the majors yet, I'd guess is pretty cheap. He has a $13 Michael Harris, who should only get better, $30 Bo Bichette, who's playing like a keeper. Like, this team could be in the thick of it in no time next year. So I'm not ready to throw next year out the window as well.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, he's only got $289 in salary right now, which means he could keep this entire team together if he wanted to. And if you look at, like, if I imagine this lineup,
Taj.
If I imagine this lineup next year, he could be rolling out Christian Walker at first base. Andrés Giménez, I know, has not been good this year, but has really turned it on of late and has been very good. He could still be your second baseman next year. Maybe Nick York is ready at second base next year. Casey Schmidt, you know, we'll have to see sort of how things go for him. At shortstop, you could keep a $30 Bichette. You're going to have Ellie De La Cruz by this, you know, by next year for sure. At third base, he's got Beatty. He's got Colt Keith and Kobe Mayo, who could be coming. And that's even assuming he cuts a $46 Machado, which I think I probably would.
Yeah.
But he would need help in the outfield. And so that's where I look at this and it's like, yeah, you'd have a, you know, $4 Gallo isn't bad, but like, building that offense and holding on to, he's got Sean Murphy, by the way, at $7 a catcher. Forgot to mention catcher. But like, building around Acuna, Harris, you know, Michael Harris puts up a good second half for you. Edward Olivares maybe can establish himself, maybe. Jackson Churio could be ready to help. But like, building around Acuna in your outfield with the way that rest of that offense has come together. And then you're looking at a rotation of Tristan McKenzie, Walker Buehler, Jordan Montgomery's been down, so maybe that's not a great example, but Grayson Rodriguez, Aaron Savali's been good. Brandon Pfaadt still could find it. Taj Bradley, we've discussed at length on the show. Like, there's a lot of pieces there. And if you keep all of those guys and still let go of Machado at $46, you're talking about having over $100 to spend to fill out this roster next year. I'm not ready to sit here and say next year's lost. And so I think going back to what I said before, if you have decided that next year is a rebuild year, then I would trade Acuna now. If you said, Chad, why don't you take over this team and manage it for me? I would not trade Acuna. I would sit on him. I'd maybe put him on the trade block and be like, hey, I'm planning on Acuna being my MVP when I win this league next year. But if you want him now, make it worth my while. But again, then if I'm doing that, like, give me, I'm going to poke around. Let's see like who the first place team is in this league and what they're doing. First place team in this league in their outfield has Luke Raley. Mancini's been terrible. Jazz, who's going to be outfield only next year. He also has Trout, Judge, Seiya Suzuki, and J-Rod. My goodness, that is a stacked outfield. That might not be a good example. They may not be interested in Acuna. But like, let's pretend they are interested in Acuna. I am more interested in dangling Acuna to that team to get like get their $12 Jazz Chisholm, get Luke Raley if you believe it. Like I've been pretty impressed with Raley. I think he's a good player. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. at $7. Buy low on Julio Rodriguez while Rodriguez is struggling right now. Like it may take more, like maybe you have to add to Acuna to get a $13 J-Rod, but like that's sort of intriguing. This team also has, like, if this team feels like they have pitching to move, you could look at, we just talked about Justin Steele. Like, go get a guy like Justin Steele, not as the only piece, but like go get someone like that. Don't go out and get a bunch of random prospects. So looking maybe the second place team. The second place team has a Rosarena, Schwarber, Yoshida, Nimmo, and then Benintendi, Laureano, Grichuk, Yastrzemski. That team might be in a better spot to buy an outfielder. I'm looking to get, like, if I'm trading Acuna from that team, it's because it makes me better next year, not because of what's happening 2 years down the line.
Agreed.
All right. Our next question comes from Michael Kirschenbaum. He's M. Kirschenbaum on Twitter. He says, what to do with a $31 Sandy Alcantara in Auto New Fangraphs points? Pitching staff otherwise is pretty strong. He's league 652. The team name is Scarlet Begonias. So considering a trade, but he doesn't want to sell low. What are your thoughts on Sandy?
Yeah, I mean, I love Sandy, but when you look at the ERA estimators, that's a good place to start when you're talking about a guy supposed to be an ace, but he has an ERA over five. They're suggesting he should be better, but not the level that you drafted him for, right? His FIP is only 3.65, but his expected ERA and his xFIP are both over four. So that ERA of five is a little bit concerning. His strand rate would suggest there's been some bad luck. Excuse me. The strikeout rate is low. We kind of expect that. He's not giving up home runs, though, which helps him in this format. I don't know. I'm holding on. I don't think $31 is killing you. I guess I would like to know what the trades are that he's considering, but I have a really hard time. The calendar just turned to June, selling so low on a young ace, just won a Cy Young award. Like, I'm concerned because of the RA estimators, but there's no way I'm ready to sell that low, especially on a guy who keeps the ball on the ground. The home runs are what kills you and not new Fangraphs points. Don't I know it? So the fact that he's still limiting that, and it looks like he's had some bad luck with the strand rate. I'm trying to find the BABIP right now. I just had it in front of me. The BABIP at 284 is above his career average of 270. So it's not like a crazy BABIP, but I'm holding out hope that he can turn this thing around here.
Yeah, so I did look at him in our podcaster league, and Tim Kanick has him. Tim has a $31 Sandy Alcantara, same price. This is a 5x5 league, it's a little bit different. I offered him a $3 AJ Smith Shauver and a $9 Hunter Renfro, Renfro being one of the guys he had specifically asked me about. He turned it down, which I can understand, but right now I'm not willing to give up more for him, I don't think, because like you said, it's not like he's just having some bad luck. Like, he's not really pitching super well. And I think if you want to be sort of optimistic here, you know, you look at that 3.65 FIP versus the 4.21 XFIP, and he, you know, he kept his home run per fly ball rate low last year, right? And so that XFIP is correcting, quote unquote, correcting that back closer to league average. But like, you know, he was below league average last year. However, he was above league average the year before that. You can be optimistic and say, look, he's now shown us over 300 innings over the last 2 years that, you know, an 8% home run per fly ball rate is legit and we shouldn't be regressing him back to 10, 11%, whatever it is XFIP assumes. But over his career, he's 10.6%. So like, I'm like, even when I try to get optimistic, I guess what I'm getting at is like, I still come back being like, I'm a little optimistic, I guess. The walks, the last 2 years when he's been, when, you know, he had a good 2021 and a great 2022. He walked 6 and then 5.6% of hitters in those two seasons. This year he's up to 7.8%. That's not terrible, but it's a big jump from where he was. And for a guy who's, you know, never been a big strikeout guy, you can't walk people, right? Like, there are, you know, it's not that there's only one way to succeed as a starting pitcher in the majors, but like, if you're not going to strike people out, you can't put them on base. And right now he's not elite at avoiding the walks, and he isn't that good at getting strikeouts. And so it's just not going to work out very well for him. Like, that's just not a good place to be. And I think even with his like left on base percentage, you know, 58% is low. That'll get better. But if you're not striking guys out, you're not going to leave as many guys on base because it's easier to move guys around on base on balls in play, right? Not just because of hits and BABIP and blah, 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 blah. But like, you know, it's harder to strand a guy on third with one out if you don't strike anybody out. So I don't expect him to have a high left on base percentage. I don't expect it to stay as low as it is, but like, it wouldn't surprise me if it stays a little on the low side. So I don't know. It's just hard to look at what he's doing and find anything that makes you say like, oh yeah, he's fine. Except that he's, you know, 27 and has been great for the last 2 years. But what he's doing this year just isn't that good.
And part of that greatness over the last 2 years is throwing about, what, 440 innings or so. The thought begins to creep in that, like, is this a pitcher who's just tired? And he threw 228 innings last year. And so to start this season as super flat as he has does have me a little bit concerned. And something that's kind of odd to me is he's throwing the sinker more than he was last year, but his ground ball rate has dipped almost 8 full percentage points. That's a lot. So this maybe needs a deeper dive than we obviously have time to do right now in the middle of the show. But like, that's weird. That's something that sticks out to me. And as you guys know, I love pitchers with high ground ball rates. And if Sandy's becoming a more average ground ball rate guy, that is detrimental to his value. Because like you said, Chad, he really doesn't strike guys out, even though, to make things weirder, the swinging strike rate is up a full percentage point from last year's Cy Young campaign. So there's not a lot of answers here, just a lot of mystery, but I'm holding on.
I think whether or not I'm holding on depends on where I am in the standings. And like, this team that asked this question is in second place right now. And in second place, I'm not like, you're not going to be able to make a trade for him for anything that's going to be more productive to winning this year than just waiting and seeing if he turns things around, especially because in a points league, like, he's been fine. He's putting up 4.77 points per inning pitched, right? You're just not going to improve your team meaningfully by trading him.
Right.
If I were at the bottom of the standings, I think I'd be kind of aggressive about moving him because, as you said, like, you worry that the innings are catching up to him, there aren't a lot of positive signs in his performance. You get the swing strike rate is up, but like so much other stuff has moved the wrong direction that I do think if I were near the bottom of my league, I'd be more inclined to be like, you know what? I want to get out now, because I think like right now you can sell him to somebody who thinks, yeah, he's down, but like he'll bounce back. Right. And they'll pay, you know, they're not going to give you a dollar for him. They're going to give you, you know, 75 cents on the dollar. But like in a couple months, that might be 50 cents on a dollar or 10 cents on the dollar. And he's not playing himself into being a keeper at $30. So I'd be more like, I think I'd be trying to move him if I were near the bottom of the standings. But if you're contending, I think he's still like, you're better off keeping him as a $30 pitcher who's only worth $12 or $13 or $15 or whatever than you are trading him for the value you can get.
Yeah, I was taking this from the perspective of him being in second place. If you're in last and you have really any pitcher that's over $30, other than maybe like McClanahan and Strider, like I'm probably just at the very least seeing what I can get. And as a buyer, if I have the pieces to move and I can get you to cover the loan and Alcantara's available for 75 cents on the dollar, I think I would actually consider buying low on Alcantara as a buyer. So he might actually be a piece that's easier to move than we might think.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, like, Tim has had him on the block for a little while in that league and has, from what I can tell, had not had any bites that have made him. I mean, he hasn't moved him. So
I want to. It's just the categories I need. Like, I already have a bunch of Sandy Alcantaras. And by a bunch, I mean, I already have Aaron Nola. So, like, I'm struggling with those exact categories. And I don't want to make it worse. But if I was good in ERA and WHIP, I'd consider trading for Alcantara just to run away with some categories towards the end.
Yeah. So we also got a question from at Burndwick, your brother,
about a league you're in.
And we'll get to that question in 1 minute, just after a quick break. All right. Welcome back. As teased before the break, we got a question from John Ball. And we're answering a question that I feel like we've discussed this league before, but maybe not this player in this league. He said, I know Pete Ball is in this league, but each and every year I face the same question. Is there any trade that can make my team better by trading Shohei Ohtani, first round value, keep forever? If he keeps two other first rounders, then he's only paying basically a third for Ohtani, or for one of them, right? He's keeping three first round players, having given up a first, second, and third round pick. He's saying it's a 16-team. What is 16-team 3K daily moves league? What
three
is
3K? Keeper.
Three keeper. K mm-hmm. keeper. I was like, 3,000 daily moves? I don't understand. Like, is that a limit?
It takes us forever.
Yeah. Is that like you have to make 3,000 moves a day? You're capped at 3,000? Who knows? Okay. 16-team, three keeper, daily lineup moves, head-to-head category, 5x5 plus walks and stolen bases for hitters, plus strikeouts per nine and quality starts. Ohtani counts as only one roster spot. I don't know if it's possible to actually get fair value for that. Like, you'd need an ace, a top 15 bat, and something to make up for the fact that you lost a roster spot, he's asking. He's just never been able to figure out a path to a deal where feels like he's not gutting his team. So from a roster construction standpoint, I mean, even in the question, he's sort of assuming this, like, oh, if I keep three first rounders and one of them's only costing me a third round pick, and like, how do you give up a third round pick Ohtani? I think the answer to the question of like, is there a deal that makes your team better? Not, well, I guess it depends. If you are competing for this year, there is probably a deal that makes you better this year if somebody is willing to gut their team to keep Ohtani, right? Some team that's bottom half of the league that says, I will give you a stud outfielder, an ace starting pitcher, and like a great shortstop in order to just have him for next year. That deal probably works for you. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you're going to get that. You know that league better than I do.
Yeah, no, there's no one in this league that's gonna give that up. I mean, it's a daily league with where you can put Ohtani at both, right? I mean, that's ultimately what it comes down to. He is the best player in the format. It counts strikeouts per nine, which is a massive strength for Ohtani as well. So that's kind of an added bonus. And when you consider the state of starting pitching this year, even though Ohtani's been a little cold lately, I don't really see why I would move him unless it was like what you said, a package that is just not going to come across the table. So I think if you have Ohtani, you enjoy rostering him. And just because you have Ohtani doesn't mean you have to keep two other first round pick players to like warrant keeping him, because he is the 1.1. Like, he just end of story, right? Yeah. So like, pretty much no matter what, you're going to be getting a lot of value. And you could argue that at 1.1, he's like a steal. Like, that's how valuable he is. I know that logically doesn't make a lot of sense, but I think you get what I'm saying here. Like, he's so much better than the next possible player, and he's two players that you can keep him for first round value and then still like try to maximize the value of your other keepers, as opposed to just pushing him to third. I think that's just trying to do too much, and he's plenty valuable keeping with just a first round pick.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that the challenge you just run into here is, like I said, if you're rebuilding, especially in a keep three, if this were a keep eight, there might be a rebuilding trade you could make to get, you know, four guys with last round pick values and just like reshaping your team. But in a keep three, you want those elite players. They're hard to come by. They're worth keeping. And I don't see I don't see a future focused deal that works. And so then you're looking at, you know, is it possible you could buy for this year? And like I said before, like, yeah, it's possible, but you need someone to basically gut their team. And now in a keep three, it is possible. There's like a, you know, 16 teamer. There could be a 10th, 11th place team that has four keepers and will give you two of those keepers and another player to get Ohtani. It's at least theoretically possible. But I think if you're going to shop him, I would be very clear with the rest of the league what you're trying to do. And just say, like, here's what I'm going to need. Like, I'm trying to win this year. The only way this is going to help is you need to give me an ace to replace Ohtani, an elite bat to replace Ohtani, and another either ace or elite bat to make it worth my while to give him up. And if you get that, great, but I don't think you're going to.
Yeah, it, in this particular league, again, that's just not, maybe closer to the deadline. We've had some rule changes where it's harder to get draft picks now, so you might just settle for Ohtani as opposed to trading, you know, half your team for a bunch of draft picks. You trade it all for Ohtani, but in the meantime, it's almost like a fantasy football league, where I think fantasy leagues in general sometimes have this problem. If the roster sizes are small and the league size is big, you know, like in fantasy football, like, everybody knows that one guy who drafted Rob Gronkowski at tight end and then hit a home run with his backup tight end is now trying to trade that backup tight end to everybody for everything that they have. But nobody wants to do it, because when you make a trade to get something, you create a hole somewhere else. And if the free agents available are not good enough because the league's too big to replace that player that you have lost, then you don't want to make a trade. So it's got to be, like you said, to an absolute seller, because there's nobody, and it's too early in the season, there's nobody that should be trading all of that to get Shohei Ohtani unless they are just definitely out of it this season. Like that team we saw with Bieber and Trey Turner and every bust of the season and Alek Manoah. Unless it's that one, you're giving up way too much.
Yeah, I mean, I got a question on the Auto News Slack today, not for the show, just someone reaching out to me about an Ohtani trade where they'd be getting Ohtani and giving up a full price Devers, as well as 1, 2, 3, 4 young, talented players, a $3 Zach Neto, a $1 Zach Eflin, a $1 Brian Dela Cruz, and a $1 Jordan Westberg.
It's like, I gave that up.
So, leaving aside whether you would or not, like, that's the kind of thing that has to happen for someone to even open the offer, right? It's like, I'm giving you the bat that immediately replaces Ohtani, and I'm giving you like a significant chunk of your roster for next year already. And that's, it's just, it's hard to make that deal in a keep three league, because in a keep three league, like, that deal's not, that's not an interesting deal in keep three. It's interesting in Auto New. It's not interesting in keep three. And that's where one of those situations where, like, league context just matters so much, because the difference in like those elite players are so much more valuable in a keep three than they are in a keep eight, a keep 10, or an Auto New style or a dynasty league, because you're not going to keep all those other guys anyways. Building a deep, like, you can't keep a deep roster in a keep three. You can keep a deep roster in Auto New. And so building a deep roster and then having cap space to augment it, like, it's one of the ways that Auto New is, I think, sort of like real baseball more than a lot of other fantasy leagues are, where we've seen a lot of teams, you know, outside of maybe, you know, the Dodgers, well, the Dodgers kind of do this, but the Dodgers, the Yankees, like the teams that have a ton of money, the way that teams build winners in Major League Baseball is you get the right prospects, you bring them up together, they get into the majors together, and then you go, oh, the guy we thought was going to be our second baseman didn't really work out. We're going to go buy the best second baseman on the market and, like, put this team over the top. Mm-hmm. At least that's what you hope to see teams do, right? And we have seen, like, you know, it's not every team, but, like, that's to some extent what we've seen the Blue Jays do, right? They had Bichette and Vlad and all these other guys come up, and then they've gone out and they've added in free agency and they've added via trade to make their team better and get to where they needed to be. The Astros, before, you know, they sort of stepped up, they sold, they brought up all these young players. They had Springer come up and Altuve come up and Bregman come up and Correa come up, and they didn't have the pitching. So what did they do? They went out and they got Gerrit Cole. They went out and they got Justin Verlander. Like, in Auto New, that works. In Auto New, that's the approach I like to take, right? Like, build a roster where you're like, wow, I've only spent $240 and my team is good and could use a couple of studs to put it over the top, and then go get those studs. In a keep three, that's a useless strategy because you're only keeping three of those guys. Right. So that makes a big difference. I think, to me, Ohtani in that kind of a format is almost untradeable.
Agreed.
So that was the last question we had coming in. Pete, I don't know what's going on in the listener league. We were talking, so we had some questions about buying and selling that listener league. You already made the one trade to get Franco. You are back to 10th place. You were up to 8th, I know, at one point. Are you still looking to make more deals there? Do you have you been trying to find additional opportunities to sell?
I mean, yeah, I guess I can make this kind of my market plea here. Everybody's available. My younger, cheaper studs like Christian Javier, especially, and Wander Franco are going to be harder to get. But I'm absolutely looking to sell out of pride. I don't want to finish in last, but I just want to look to compete next year. And I feel like the pitching situation really blew up. Like, yeah, great. I'm glad Max Scherzer's finally pitching well. When I'm like mountains behind in every pitching category, that, like, even if I went all out and maximized as much as I could out of this rotation, I'd still finish probably middle of the pack. So having a 38-year-old, is he 38 years old? I don't know, but having a $38 Max Scherzer, he's someone I'm looking to move. Jose Ramirez, definitely looking to move. Christian Yelich, with his 352 OBP, looking to move as well. So yeah, man, I'm totally in the sell market at this point.
Yeah, I'm in a similar boat. You do not have to worry about finishing in last place, because I think I'm running away with that right
now.
Got
that on lock. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a little jealous of you, actually, though, because, like, you've got, you know, Ramirez, Olsen. We'll see what the market's like for Eloy Jimenez. Yelich for some team that needs on base percentage. You've got Scherzer. Like, you've got some pieces you can trade, whereas I look at my most expensive players and, like, you know, Machado's been struggling. He's just back from injury. I need to figure out if I can, you know, I need to let him build up his value again, I think. Aaron Nola hasn't been very good. He's my most expensive pitcher. My next most expensive pitcher is Logan Webb, who at $24, I've got on my trade block, but, like, I'm not anxious to trade him. I can keep a $26 Webb as my ace next year, I think, or one of my aces. And so I've got like the guys I want to trade are like I'd like to trade Wilson Contreras because I've got a $3 Logan Ohapi now that I think can be my catcher of the future. And so I don't necessarily need to keep my $14 Wilson Contreras, but like I haven't really seen any interest in him. I have a $21 Willy Adames, and as much as I love Willy Adames, I'm happy to move on from the $21 version. He's on rehab now, so hopefully he'll be back soon and can rebuild some value too, but like not a lot of bites there. And so it's just sort of been, you know, even the deal I made before where I traded Rizzo and Nimmo, I didn't really want to trade Nimmo. It just was a deal that I felt like I liked the value, and so I it worked for me.
Sure.
But, you know, the offer, the only other offer I've gotten in that league was, let me see where it was, because I rejected a trade just this week. So, for my $41 Machado, $33 Nola, $24 Logan Webb, and a $7 Lars Nootbaar, right? So, two guys I definitely want to trade in Machado and Nola, a guy I am open to trading in Webb, and then Nootbaar, who I have no desire to trade. I am always open to moving anybody, but Nootbaar is not, you know, likely to go. Sure. And the offer I got back was a $9 Matt Chapman, a $4 Ben Brown, a $2 Michael Bush, and a $1 Tanner Bibee. And it's like, I love $1 Bibee. I'd be very happy to go out and get him. But like Bush, Brown, and Chapman are sort of meh pieces, I think. Like, I like them all. I think they're all interesting, but not one of those guys is a guy that I'm like, oh, yes, I'm thrilled to get this guy as a centerpiece of a trade, let alone a trade where I'm giving up, you know, I guess it's debatable whether or not I want to call Nola an ace at this point, but two aces in Nola and Webb, Machado and Nootbaar, who at $7 is, I don't know, depending on how you feel about him versus Bibee, he's either the first or second best long-term piece in this deal. So it's just challenging to figure out what I'm going to do in this league. And I'm, you know, I get like, maybe it's a call to the people in this league to, you know, send offers our way. But like, even I look at the trade block and it's like, seventh place team has a $8 Jeffrey Springs on the block. I don't really want $8 Jeffrey Springs because he's so far off. The 11th place team in between us in the standings is also selling, so they're not going to be a fit. The first place team is dangling a $32 Sandy Alcantara, right? Which is getting back to the conversation we had earlier. And like, I'm not buying him from my position in the standings. It doesn't do me any good. I guess if he wanted Nola, maybe I'll swap Nola for him. Would you like to pay $1 more for a pitcher who has been not as good historically and is worse this year? Let's see.
Tempting.
The second base team I think the team I already made a deal with. The third place team is like hasn't updated their block in a couple weeks, but the guys they have in there are like Arenado, Altuve, maybe there's some interesting there, but like Drew Jones is one of these guys who I think is too far away. So I haven't really seen stuff showing up on the block that is exciting yet. And maybe it's just too early. Like maybe my team's been so bad that I'm being pushed into selling before everyone else is ready to buy.
It could be the case. I've only sent out a few offers. I will give the people in this league credit. They're very quick with the responses. Even with my
pieces, it's a great league.
It's an awesome league. But even you were talking about how my pieces should be appealing, and I just haven't quite received an offer that I'm ready to go all in on other than the Franco one. I was pretty close. I did receive an interesting offer for Scherzer. It was a 1-for-1. And I was thinking about it. Cause like Scherzer's just starting to get hot. Do I wait until, you know, he's full on Max Scherzer and I can get even more for him? And then the player who was offered to me got hurt. So it kind of washed everything out. But yeah. Yeah. It's tough finding a trade partner so far.
Yeah, I put an offer out in another league to get a $31 Scherzer where I am trying to buy. I'm short on innings and I had a really hard time figuring out how to value Scherzer given inconsistent performance this year, injury issues recently, age factoring into both of those things. Yeah, it's been a I feel like there's a lot of pitchers like that, that like Scherzer, Alcantara, Nola, all names we've talked about this episode, but there's others out there too, who are just like, you feel like they should be worth something, but what? And right. It's really hard to like align on that. The same team that I made the Scherzer offer to, they have Jacob DeGrom on their block. And I'm running the same thing there. It's like, I don't know how to value DeGrom in a trade, because, you know, he's throwing some bullpens. Maybe he'll be back in a 3 weeks, something like that. But then is he around for a month? Is he around for the rest of the year? Like, I don't know.
One inning? Like, right. With that guy,
anything could happen.
Who knows?
Right. And so you get in these tough situations where it's like, I just don't know how to find the right trade for pitching this year, because either the pitchers are doing well and they are therefore completely untradeable because you cannot move pitchers who are doing well, or they're not. And it's like, I don't know what I want to give up for them, which is making it very hard in, like, you know, the league I'm talking about now is my food and travel league that I've talked about before, where I am currently in fifth place. The top three in that league are the teams that get the food. So, you know, getting into that top three matters.
It's a big deal.
It's a 4x4. In the four offensive categories, I have a total of 42 points from the four offensive categories. 9 for runs, 11 for home runs, 10 for on base, 12 for slugging. Offense is doing its job. I have 4.5 points for strikeouts, 2 for home run per 9, 3 for ERA, and 4 for whip. Now, the strikeouts one is in a weird way a positive thing. I've thrown the second fewest innings, but I'm sort of middle of the pack-ish in strikeouts. So I have a path to gaining there. But I need to find innings, because the reason I'm bottom in the strike in innings is because I have no pitching. Like, I literally, like, as of right now, I have 7 starting pitchers on my roster who are healthy. And of those 7, like, Alex Cobb has been very good. Tyler Wells has been good. Clayton Kershaw has been very good. That's it. Then I've got Haney, Pablo Lopez, who started off great, but it's been terrible. Johan Oviedo, who's been better lately, and I'm sort of optimistic. And I've got Hayden Wesneski. And then I'm waiting, like, Ben Brown, I would trade. Wesneski, I would trade too, if I could get the right pitcher. But, like, Ben Brown maybe comes around to help me. I've got Fried, Rodon, Montas, and Turnbull all on the IL in that league. It's like, maybe there's some help coming, although Turnbull was terrible. So, you know. Yeah, it's just,
he was a disappointment.
But then I go look at the trade market, and it's like, there's just nothing. Like, I'm going to just go through, here are all the pitchers that are on the trade block right now, other than the ones I put on there. Nick Lodolo, who's hurt. Ricky Tiedemann, who's in the minors.
And hurt, I believe.
And, oh, is he hurt? Yeah, yeah. DeGrom and Scherzer, who we already talked about. We have a team that in April said they would trade from their starting pitching, but didn't list any pitchers. That's it. That's all the starting pitching.
Scherzer looks really good there. Not going to lie.
So that's like, I made an offer. I reached out to that team. We'll see if it lands anywhere. But like, I mean, it's literally like, that's a list. I have 1, 2, 3. I have Montas, Brown, and Wesneski on the block. That's the most pitchers that any team in the league is willing to trade right now. So, like,
and it's the team looking for pitching.
It's the team looking for pitching. And yeah,
it's brutal out there, man.
We'll see what happens. It is.
It's compounded by all these injuries. I mean, I thank you for not bringing up Chris Sale, which, like, is just devastating. But I have so many teams that I went to this year thinking, okay, pitching's not going to be a problem for me. Like, I drafted hitter heavy, but I made sure to still get a lot of pitching just in case, you know, the balls did revert back or whatever it might be. And they've just all got hurt. That 16 team league that my brother was asking about, Jeffrey Springs and Chris Sale and Carlos Rodon. Like, if that's your situation, a 16 team league, good luck.
Right.
So it's an impossible situation this year.
It is. Well, with that, we've crossed over an hour and we're now just sort of like rambling about our teams, which I think ceases to be interesting at some point.
I'm sure there's a lot of empathetic listeners out there that are like, preach. Yeah. So,
well, I hope they enjoyed it. If not, we'll, you know, do something different next week. So thanks for listening. We'll be back with you next week.